Hello again, I'm Frieda Morrison. Welcome to Scots Language Radio and a programme that celebrates R into D with the Scots language. If you want to hear it, ging as far north, south, east and west as your logs will take you. In this edition, we hear about the Book of Deer project, with its music just written to be performed at the Edinburgh Festival. Our special guest is internationally renowned singer, spinner and weaver, Norman Kennedy, making a brief visit to Scotland from Vermont in the USA. And hopes for the future for the Scots Tune of the Year, that's Keith in Murrayshire. It's a busy programme again, so we'll nae hing aboot. On the 17th, 18th and 19th of August, as part of the Edinburgh Festival, audiences will be able to hear music specially written to celebrate the Book of Deer from the area of Buchan in Aberdeenshire. The Book of Deer project commissioned St Andrews composer Richard Ingham to write the music, which is in 12 sections. It's inspired by the book, the local working community and the monastery itself, for it's believed to have been written. The texts include an account of the founding of the monastery by St Columba and St Drostan. Here's a bit for the first section of music. A bit of Richard Ingham's music for the Book of Deer project. Now, the Book of Deer is a 10th century gospel book with 12th century editions. It's the oldest book written in Scotland, with seven Scottish Gaelic texts. Some of it refers to the founding of the monastery by St Columba. Now, the book was lost for a few centuries, but now it's found. But are they any further for it with finding the place of the actual monastery? A question I put to one of the directors of the Book of Deer project, Derek Jennings.
For the last 5 years since I've been involved in the project, in fact, just before I got involved with the project, we employed Glasgow University to Archaeological Department to come up here and dig about for us. They did a tabletop research for us in the first instance, and then they come up after that and they did a dig at the most likely spots, runabout deer, the old deer, where we think the monastery was. It satisfies all the criteria for a monastery, a Pictish monastery, in that it was in a slight elevation of land, it was in a bend of the river, like St Machar's in Aberdeen and various other Irish, we're speaking about the 6th, maybe 7th century or something like that, that this monastery would have been established. The fact that there is a monastery at Camoot through, again, the Gaelic writings in the Book of Deer, there is mention of charters for David I in the 1150s. There's mention of him. So, I mean, we know there was a monastery because there is an Abbey of Deer, which is still extant, and you can see the fones of that. But the Abbey of Deer was built about 1210. But we have, as I said, we've got manuscripts, 1150, speaking about the monastery.
Now, we're on to the bitty. Far is the Book of Deer, fit happened out.
The Book of Deer itself, well, we're not too sure if it happened, but it turned up in Norwich about the 1700s, and then purely by coincidence it landed up in King George's library, King George's library, I can't remember which George it was, but for there he donated it to Cambridge University Library. And it just sat there for long enough, we didn't care. But about the 1860s, Amani Bradshaw, he come across this, and I didn't care for his association with the northeast of Scotland, but he recognised it as being for the northeast of Scotland because of words and place names in a Gaelic text.
Like Fit.
Like, there was Federate, I think. Others' names, Pitfour, Old Deer, there was a few names are within the Gaelic text, and I didn't ken how he recognised it, but he did. And for there, it started to come to a prominence.
Aye, but how did it get down here?
Well. The current thinking among academics is that Edward I, the Hammer of the Scots, when he came up here and he was rampaging through Scotland in the late 1200s and early 1300s, it was the kind of thing that he would do to empower himself and among the local peoples was he would take an object from the local peoples and he would take it back to England. Now, he did this with the Stone of Destiny. We ken that he did this with the Stone of Destiny. Now, we think that he also did this with the Book of Deer because it was a very powerful symbol to people in the area because it evoked all sorts of legends about St. Columba and St. Drostan and how he would protect the people. It was all written into the book that he would protect the people of Deer and the monks of Deer. So
this is Edward saying, I didn't care about that. I'm more powerful than that. I'm going to attack it to myself, Doon, across the border.
And I'll hear HUD. I'll hear HUD or the people of Buchan. That was kind of... That's my personal idea. But it has been mooted that he actually Tina Doonsooth, and that's why.
Right, this is another good bit just to hear. We breathe it to take all that in, so it's a lot to take in. Listen to some Mayor Richard's music for the Book of Deer project. Here it comes. Got to the bit for we ken where it is, we ken where took it, we ken fits in it, but now we're on to the Book of Deer project, Derek. How did that happen? So how did the music bit come end up?
It was an idea that I had to try and up the profile of the Book of Deer because, as I say, it's very well known in the academic circles, but it's never very well kent and among ordinary folk. So the idea for me was music conveys an awful lot in among ordinary folks. So if we could maybe put a piece together about the Book of Deer, and Richard, the composer, Richard Ingham, the composer, he said, well, why not do a piece in 12 parts? And before every part is played, we'll take an item out of the Book of Deer and do a little spick about that first. And then we'll just continue for there. And we'll,
Cathal's
Feast, for example, was one of them. This splendid little book is another. That's a very poignant part in the book. It says, I can't remember his exact words, but if you are reading this little book, this is a dreadful translation, but spare a thought for the wretch who wrote it. You can so nice little touches like that come out the book, and Richard's incorporated all this into his preamble before he plays every piece.
It's maybe a daft question, but I have to ask it. Why was it written?
I think the most important thing was this was a powerful document. This was the time of the warrior priests that were gone about. These people were very important, and to evoke again a name like St. Columba, to evoke a name like him and hear a book associated with his name, it was really important for the people round about and for people who might be thinking about invading the church, the monastery, or anything like that. Well, there was all sorts of raiders going about in the 8th century. You had the Vikings and all the rest of it. Not that they would have understood it, but there could have been local landowners and stuff like that. And then you have the Normans coming up. This was the time of the Norman invasion up into Scotland. So
about fit time.
The 1100s, the 1150s and stuff like that.
He's gone about marauders and raiders.
Exactly. They're all coming in about, and as a say in Latin, they had a book with an evocation of a very powerful saint from the 6th century.
So did they just go out and say, here's a book, we've got this book, and this will evoke?
They will have put it out into the community. The community, word gets about.
I'm just trying to think.
Even in that days, words get about, and they would say, oh Christ, we can't touch him because they've got a book about St. Columba. And it was, you know, it was the foundations of this place was St. Columba. Uh-huh. So we couldn't possibly ransack this monastery. So that's why they used it.
Because you didn't hear the website saying, dinner ransack us.
Dinner ransack us.
Didn't hear the Twitter or Facebook saying, dinner come near us. us.
Not me, no, that at all.
We've got the book.
Aye, that's it. They just had a book up, like a referees do nowadays.
So you're looking forward, of course, going to Edinburgh and to the
looking
studio.
Forward, yes. Richard is performing the Book of Deer Suite at the Storytelling Centre.
It's on the Royal Mile.
It's on the Royal Mile, so if you manage to get down there, and I'm sure you're going to come away disappointed.
Well, it's one of my favourite places to be anyway, so it's a great place to perform this. Derek, best wishes.
Thank you very much. Bye.
Richard Ingham's music, finishing that confab with Derek Jennings, one of the directors of the Book Idea Project. And Derek has asked me to thank the committee for the work they've done over the years, local businessman Charlie Ritchie for his support, the Rotary Club of Central Buchan for organising the premiere, and Viscount and Viscountess Petersham for giving them the grand hall at Crimmon Mogget beside St Coombs for the premiere. And you can hear the entire suite, all the 12 parts, being performed at the Scottish Storytelling Centre in Edinburgh's Royal Mile on the 17th, 18th and 19th of August as part of the Edinburgh Fringe Festival and Creative Scotland's Made in Scotland Showcase. Now here's Corinne Polwart singing Birks of Invermay from her album The Fairest Floor.
Behold hills and dales around, we low flocks and herds abound, the wanton kids and frisking lambs gamble and dance around their dams. The busy bee we hum in noise, and all the reptile kind rejoice. Let us like them in sport and play among the barks of Invermay. How soon the winter o' the year and age lies winter do appear. It's then your living blue pleasure then is o'er, and the feathered songsters are no more. When they drip and we decay, farewell the birks o' Invermay. Loudly, my love, take gladness call. The wanton waves sport in the beams, and fishes play throughout the streams. The circling sun does now advance, and all the planets round them dance. Let us be blithe and then gay among the birks o' Invermay, among the birks o' Invermay.
Corinne Polwart singing The Birks of Invermay from the album The Fairest Floor. And it's an appropriate time to introduce my studio companion. We were speaking earlier about evoking and the Book of Deer. His very name evokes something in the hearts and minds Well, a lot of folk. And I'm sure we'd find the Book of Deer a fascinating read if he could read in Latin like. Welcome again, folklorist and our music sorter, Steve Byrne.
Hiya, Frieda.
Right, the Book of Deer. What do you make of that?
Ah, for interesting. It's for somebody that comes from Angus, you know, that whole thing about picked land and how the place names. I mean, we've got, I think, the Drosten Stone that's in one of the museums in Angus, and I'm fascinated by that whole thing of kind of books being kind of icons and folk hiding them and then raiders coming in and attacking them. I can, for example, the story of the Book of Kells. My father was from Dublin and we'd hanging and see that as Bairns. A similar story there.
Well, did you ken that, well, it's thought that the Book of Deer was a foundation for the Book of Kells.
Right,
that inspired the Book of Kells, because there's a lot of Pictish symbolism in, okay, it's a simplistic form, it's in the Book of Deer, but that it actually inspired, because there was a scriptorium up in Rosshire that they started off there and came down to New Deer, Old Deer, and it was all bound up in one.
Oh, it's fascinating. I think it's brilliant as well that the presence of the Gaelic text, it kind of puts a light to some folks' perceptions maybe of Scottish history and where the languages have come from and all that sort of
it's
thing.
It's Arthur with her. It's just Arthur. It's the only word I can try and describe. It's Arthur with
her.
Okay. Events, Steve. August being a busy time.
Aye, there's a wheen of things going on. You've mentioned Edinburgh Festival, so it makes sense to give folk an idea of a few things that are going on that might be of interest with Scots language and other things. So at the Fringe, there's Daniel Padden and a guy called Drew Wright, who is under the name of Wounded Knee, and they've got a bonny show card and Blithely Spend the Gowden Day. And it's a new song cycle celebrating the seasons inspired by,
lovely idea,
by Edinburgh and the Pentland Hills. That's on at the Storytelling Centre. And I'm associated with the centre, as you can. We had Donald in a few shows ago, and so I'm a wee bit biased to their events, so hope you didn't mind. But they've got a thing called the Celtic Summer School that's running under the Tracks umbrella. Donald had explained to us what Tracks was. And, for example, Fred Freeman, the authority on Robert Burns, is looking at Burns's place in the national music and really exploring Burns, not just as a poet, but more as a songwriter, and fitty often cried himself a fiddler, so that'd be half interesting.
I noticed that Mary McFadden is speaking about one of my favourite characters in Scotland, Patrick Geddes.
Aye, she's half interested in that, and that ties in with that heel part of Edinburgh as well.
I mean, I did a lot of research with Patrick Geddes for the Forestry Commission. I was doing a presentation about his philosophy as well. Mm-hmm. They're really fascinating. Of course, he was born in Ballater, and I met a great man and one of my dearest friends, Les Bizet. He was the curator at Dundee Botanic, University Botanic Gardens. Aye. And Les introduced me to Patrick Geddes' sayings and philosophies, and he spoke about the indivisibility of knowledge.
Aye.
Very important that Patrick Geddes spoke about.
Aye.
And of course, Patrick Geddes, one of his main, I suppose, bumper sticker phrases is, by leaves we live.
Indeed, aye.
By leaves we live.
And that's part of the slogan of the Scottish Poetry Library, just out of the road for the Storytelling Centre. One of the other things taking place during the Fringe is Theatre Alaba are doing Mary Stuart, which is by Robert McLellan, and it's in Scots. It's the Queen of Scots story, essentially, in Scots, and that's going for the 6th of August right through to the end at Duddingston Kirk in the Manx Gardens there, so be worth checking out, and even just for the visit to Duddingston Kirk itself, but the show should be fantastic and poetic Scots.
That sounds great.
There's not just things happening, of course, in Edinburgh, other parts of the country. Over at the Burns Birthplace Museum in Alloway, there's an opera workshop in Scots. What do you think of that?
Wow.
Aye.
Now there's a thing.
Aye, there's a laddie cried, David Douglas. He's a tenor that's looking partly at the Scots translation of a French opera that's been done by Chris Waddles, and you can gang along for a week and learn to sing opera in Scots, and then at the end of the week there's a performance of the thing itself. So that starts on the 10th of August at the Burns Birthplace.
There's heaps going on.
Aye.
Just heaps.
And a wee plug, this is partisan again, I'm afraid, that the Arbroath Sea Fest is taking place on the 9th and 10th of August, so get along and get yourself a smoky.
I might even just tuck up your invitation. Time for a bit of more music. You've chosen, I think, to feature Emily Smith's new album. What's it called?
The new album's called 10 Years. It's really a retrospective of her career. I used to play with Emily. She's a lovely singer for Thornhill in Dumfriesshire. And the track we've chosen is a more upbeat version than folk are maybe used to hearing, or the ballad May Colvin.
Thank you. False Sir John's a-wooing, gone to a meadow beauty fair. May Colvin was this lady's name, her feathers on the air. He wooed her, but he wooed her, then he wooed her in the hall, until he got this lady's consent, he mounted right awa'. They went into her feather's bower, where all the steeds did stand, and hasting, you know, the best steeds there, right free her feather's hands. He's got on and she's got on, as fast as they could flee, until they come to a lonesome part, a rock by the side of the sea. Sir John, your bridal bed you see, for it's even ladies' age, and in the 18 ye shall be. Cast off, me Colvin, oh, and your silken gown, for it's ever good and ever costly to rot in the salt sea foam. We'll turn ye about then, false Sir John, look to the leaf o' the tree, for it ne'er become a gentleman, a naked woman to see. So he turned himself straight round about, to look to the leaf o' the tree. So swift as May Colvin was, she pushed him in the sea. Colvin, oh help, or else I'll drill, and I'll tack you back to your feathers, boot, and set you safe and sound. Nay help, oh false Sir John, nay help nor pity for thee, but it's even King's doctor, she'll be drinned, and the eighth you'll know be me. So she'll out onto her feathers, steed as swift as she could flee, and she got him to your feathers, bout afore the break o' day. And what's become of false Sir John, that would you late your stream? Oh, hold your tongue, my pretty bird, lay not the blame on me. And your cup shall be o' the gate reek out, in your cage o' the root o' the tree. Up and spack the king himself, through the chamber where he lay. What ails thee, May Colvin's bird, that prattles along the day? While the camacatty, my cage door, it nearly worried me. And I was calling on May Colvin to tack the cat frae me.
Emily Smith singing May Colvin for your new album, 10 Years. Now, the other day, I had the pleasure of the company of one of my favourite traditional singers, and a man who has a legend the length and breadth of the USA and beyond. He left these shores around 43 years ago, as you'll hear, to sing and spin his way into the hearts and minds of the folk in America. He was given one of the highest awards in the States in 2003, the National Heritage Fellowship Award, for his singing and spinning. He's here on a short visit, and I managed to catch up with Norman Kennedy for the news and find out how he made the jump from Aberdeen to Vermont. Farley Bides knew.
Well, I was invited. And the second time I was invited as well, I didn't go. So I was
Why invited you go?
Pete Seeger, you've heard Pete Seeger, Mark Kent, their friend, Mark Kent, his father. Mike, his half-brother, come to sing the Folk Song Club. First, when I heard about the Folk Song Club, you see, I'd been going out with the Clan Hay dancers singing. Glen Sheehan, places like that.
Braemar, you were up in
the... Round about there. And out to Dalgety Castle, because Captain Hay, you know, who was a character, to say the least. We're going out there singing. No money, but they'd feed you and give you petrol, gas money. So I was singing. So I heard about the Folk Song Club. I said, oh, they're singing Michael Row the Boat Ashore and that. But I went down, and then I was joining in courses, and Arthur Argo heard me. So he says, you can? I said, oh, he says, aye, fine. I can all of that stuff. So I would sing. But we would sing American stuff as well as Scotch stuff. But he said to me one time, will you come down because this American's coming? Well, I got fed up being trotted out as the tame traditional singer, because I was the youngest, and I was a traditional singer, very much so. Because I learned Jeannie Robertson, she was a neighbour of ours when we got bombed out, and we sent her across to Pedodry, our direct place. I kent her mother. And then when I started going across there, she says, I ken you, I've seen your face, I've seen your read here before. So she was a mentor of mine.
I'm going to go back a wee bit to Arthur Argo, and he was a mentor of yours as well, because he encouraged a lot of folk, and I think he sung at the very first People's Festival down in Edinburgh. Am I hearing a recording of that? But he also started Arthur's Feet and discovered a lot of folk in the folk scene. I'm just giving folk a wee bit of a background to Arthur.
Well, I wasn't really in the folk scene until I've been singing a lot out by, until I'd get down there, and then I just fit it in fine, you see. But I got fed up getting treated, so I went down and I put my half crown in and I said, what are you paying for? You didn't pay your singing. I'm saying, I'm not going to sing. You can't be like that. I said, watch me. So, and I just wanted to hear the American, because there weren't many Americans in Aberdeen going about at that time, way before the ale business. So, at halftime, Arthur comes up with a double whiskey. He never bought me whiskey. I thought, I should try this opener. And I drank that. I would have sung for the Pope. I never. So I sang both in Scotch and then in Gaelic. And I went to a party and something. So Mike came up. He'd been told to look for somebody, one from England, one from Ireland, one from Scotland, to the Newport Folk Festival in 65 to show the roots of the American ballad singing tradition, which is far more Scotch, far more than it is English, or certainly Irish, or some Irish, but nay the old ballads, which did exist in my day, in the 60s, and that still existed. And I met up with these folk, and got on fine, because I was making homemade whiskey, I was singing the ballads, being Scotch in America is absolutely open sesame. Absolutely, right to this day, open sesame.
So you went across to the Newport Festival?
I went to the Newport Festival. My boss was going to give me just 2 weeks, and once I got there, I smelt freedom. Actually, I smelt opportunity. So I had a 3 months ticket. I went up to Vermont the second. A young couple had a recording studio there, Sandy and Carolyn Baden, and I met them in Jeannie Robertson's house. So they came down, took me up there, never thinking I'd spend so many years in Vermont, and then went into Canada. Went to Ontario, Quebec, and then went up to Cabreton amongst the Gaelic speakers there. Because there had been a bunch of Gaelic speakers come down to the Newport Folk Festival. They were singing on the stage, and I just walked up. And they sing, when they're not walking, they're singing that. So I took a hand and sing, and they're looking at me. Oh, I said, Hanako, where are you from? I said, Chendui, from the old country, you know. So anyway, then I come back, but of course I'd left my job. But I went singing again for about a year, had a great time.
Oh, in the States and Canada?
This is when I come back. I was only there 3 months. And then I said to some of the guys here, I says, oh, Doc Watson's coming across to sing. I'd met Doc, he was blind, of course, with Ralph Rinsler, a fellow that started, he was on the board, a chairman in Newport. So we drove down and I went back. He said, Norman, he says, I've been looking for you. I can't find you in the phone book. I said, we don't have a phone for a start. He says, I'm going to start a business in Cambridge, Massachusetts. Would you come across? What are you doing? He says, nothing. So I went across there, lived in New York in the village for a while. Again, in the village when there was amazing singers. I've heard some tremendous singers. And I would hear a lot more traditional music in the States and Canada than we'd hear a lot more. But a lot of different traditions. But Irish, Scotch-Irish, very much so. Mm-hmm. I mean, in Boston, you can hear the Irish Gaelic in the streets. But anyway, I went across and then I did the Newport Festival that second year. And then Ralph started the festival in the mall, in July 4th weekend, about 100,000 people at least in the heat. I used to weave in the great big albums, weave and then sing, and then I said either one or the other. But the folk again I met there was smashing.
In 2003, you were awarded the National Heritage Fellowship Award.
Now, everybody else there got awarded for one thing. I got awarded for two.
For weaving,
for the textiles
and
for the traditional singing.
That's a huge award.
Twice?
One of the highest awards in the US.
Twice?
Right.
I was the last.
I have not got that double whiskey like Arthur Argo here.
Yeah.
But I've given you a book. I've given you Derek Jennings' book.
Yeah.
He gave me, and I'll have to get another one for Derek.
Right.
Does that... worth a song? Could I get a song?
Well, what kind of song would you like?
Well, just a Northeast song and Scots song or anything.
I sheared my first hirst at Boggin, doon be the back of Benahi, and sair I rocht and sair I focht, but yet I won my pennies fee, Lentrinady, Turinady, Lentrinady, Turinay. I'll gang the gate that I hae gained, and a bitter bairnie I shall be. No righty's work gets on cassair, and Rainy's watches, they are small. And Rainy's drills are double-stracht, and that does grieve my maester. Ah, Lentrinady, Turinady, Lentrinady, Turinay. I'll gang the gate that I hae gained, and a bitter bairnie I shall be. No Rainy hath a healing tune, and disna suit a lallan's loon. And Rainy hath a calkly hole, and nothing like my fiddler's tune. Lentrinady, Turinady, Lentrinady, Turinay. I'll gang the gate that I hae gained, and a bitter bairnie I shall be. Now, next month I'll be 81. That's no bad for an Alzheimer.
That's no bad. Norman, it was an honour to meet you again.
Oh, fine. I hope you do something with that. Yep.
And thank you for doing this.
No bother.
Thank you for giving me your time, because again, it's a flying visit again. But you're a busy man. But I hope you enjoy the book, Derek.
I certainly will.
And we'll meet up again next time you're back.
Fune. Ka kari, but ka wa. There you go.
The renowned Norman Kennedy. The Hale session was sic a pleasure. A very special person and a very special singer. Just to explain, Derek Jennings for the Book of Deer gave me one of his books he did about the folklore of Buchan, you see, and I was sitting on the table and I thought, right, how am I going to get Norman to sing? I said, would the Book D, would you take a book? So I got him to sing the song for Derek. I'm going to hate to get another book for you. I'm sorry, but I bartered your book. Now, you're listening to Scotch Language Radio. This is Frieda Morrison. With me is my studio companion, folklorist Steve Byrne. Listening to that, Steve, I'm sure you picked up on the fact that he got the National Heritage Fellowship Award in the USA. Fit awards have we given him?
Well, indeed. That's a good question, because he's certainly somebody that, being involved in the fields I'm involved in, I've kent about Norman and his work for a long time, but he certainly knew the recognition I think that he deserved, because he represents not just the Northeast tradition, but he went off and immersed himself in Gaelic culture as well. So if you can back and listen to some of his albums, even back as far back, you know, in the 60s, he was singing a kinds of songs for Aaron Scotland, and I think he's just an amazing performer, and he's really been so dedicated to his art. So it's great to see him. By the time this programme gangs out, he'll have been at the Killarley Traditional Singing Festival, so it'd be great to to have had him over and need out sharing a few songs. I didn't realise he was 81. That's
isn't
some
that
innings. Aye.
Just amazing. Randy, of course, he played in the same stage, he was saying, as Pete Seeger, Bob Dylan, Joan Baez, so many of the greats. I think it's time for another bit of music for Emily Smith's new album. 15 have you chosen this time?
Well, we're going to bide with the kind of pluin theme, I suppose, for Riney. The song's just called The Plumin.
Here it goes.
The Plumin, he's a bonny lad, his hair 'tis ever true, Joe. His garters knit below the knee, and his bonnet it is blue, Joe. Then up we had all my plumin' lads, hi my merry plumin'. Oh, of all the trades a tidy ken, commend me tae the plumin'. My plumin' he comes hame at nicht, he's often wet and weary, to cough the wet, put on the dry, and go to bed, my dearie. Then up we had all my plumin' lads, hi my merry plumin'. Oh, of all the trades a tidy ken, commend me tae the plumin'. I will wash my plumin' sark, and I will wash his orlay. I will mak my plumin's bed, and cheer him late and early. Then up we had all my plumin' lads, hi my merry plumin'. Oh, of all the trades a tidy ken, commend me tae the plumin'. Was my bloomin' laddie dancing? Then up we had all my bloomin' lads, hi my merry bloomin'. Oh, of all the trades a tidy ken, commend me tae the bloomin'. Snow white stockings on his legs, and cellar buckles glancing, a good blue bonnet on his head, and oh, but he was handsome. Then up hi, my merry plumin'. Oh, of all the trades a tidy ken, commend me tae the plumin'. Till I met wi my plumin'. Oh, and up we had all my plumin' lads, hi my merry plumin'. Oh, of all the trades a tidy ken, commend me tae the plumin'. Oh, and up we had all my plumin' lads, hi my merry plumin'. Oh, of all the trades a tidy ken, commend me tae the plumin'.
Thank you. Emily Smith singing The Plumin for her new album called 10 Years. You're listening to Scots Language Radio. This is Frieda Morrison and my studio companion is Steve Byrne. Far has got a hell of information about Fardy and Fit, Far and Foo, and Fit Why, Steve, Bits and Bobs.
Well, you're part of the world to an extent, Frieda. Bucky in Fraserburgh, had you ever come across a thing called the Bury Man?
Mm-hmm.
Well, that used to exist in some of the fishing communities, of course, and apparently they used to do it for to raise the herring. So they would put a boy into a curtain and cover him an hour in burrs for the burdock. I'm told that's how Bucky Thistle is called Bucky Thistle, by the way.
I didn't care.
That's fit my book says anyway. But of course, it doesn't exist on anymore in that part of the world. But folk doing in about around Edinburgh, if we're recording now. We'll ken that in South Queensferry, the Bury Man is still on the go, and that takes place on the second Friday of August, so just coming up.
Am I imagining things? But did the Bury Man used to be covered in bees? Or is that just my, have I just dreamt that?
It kind of looks like he'd be covered in green bees. but I'm not sure, but he certainly is covered head to toe at South Queensferry in the burrs that they
You think it would be sere, wouldn't it?
Well, indeed, and there's the boy says, in the interviews I was reading in the research, was that when he tacks the burrs off, because he's kind of immobile, he's digging around the toon, you know, stiff as you like, with all the burrs on, that he kind of gets a sort of an adrenaline rush when he tacks that hang off. You know, because the pain's a why, you can move it and get into the lavvy and all that kind of stuff.
He'd be covered in jabby bits.
Indeed. But it's a sair job, and it starts at about 7 in the morning and gangs right through to tea time. And the bad news is that it starts off in the Stag's Heed, finishes up in the Stag's Heed, and in between there's about 8 pubs and a few drams of whiskey through a straw.
No. So. Okay, my imagination's gone a wee bit further on and just drinking the stuff. If you're covered in jabby things.
Aye.
If you're drinking a lot of stuff,
aye.
Okay, we'll go quickly on to the next bitty.
Indeed.
I'll leave that for folk to kind of work out for them thinking of that.
Indeed. One thing I would like to just say about the Bury Man as well, was a boy that did it for 25 years. He retired in 1999.
Maybe he just got addicted to jabbies.
Well, indeed. Other things. In Shetland, I was having a look. Of course, this is the time of the licht nichts, certainly up in the northern part of Scotland. And the Simmer Dim is often spoken about, and for the 12th of May, the 12th of August is when it's considered to be the Simmer Dim. And about the 1850s, there or thereabouts, it was thought that the Shetlanders would ken the time of year based on the way that the Laverock would be ginging about. Apparently, they would set the dim between about 11:30 at night and about 1 in the morning. And at 1 in the morning, the Laverock would tear the dim, which is when it got going again, and then it would rest until the sun came up. So
now, this is a funny thing. You mentioned about the Laverock. Every night, at the same time, this woodcock flees across my garden.
Mm-hmm.
And then every night, at the same time, it flees back. Because the woodcock used to be called the woodland pig. You see, it makes a snorting noise.
Aye.
I just fleeing. That was me making impersonating what woodcock. I thought
your hay fever was playing up a bit of it.
That was my woodcock impersonation. Not to be confused with my Jimmy Stewart impersonation, which is a totally different sound. But the woodcock flees across. So it's had to do with a licht, you see.
Mm-hmm.
I worked that out. But it goes, exactly. No, it's been doing this for years, so it couldn't be the same woodcock, eh?
You
want to hear my impersonation again? That's my woodcock. Okay. Sorry, I interrupted you.
Folk will be ringing in with herbal remedies for you. of course, the beginning of August is the Lammas Tide, so grass wouldn't be cut until after the 1st of August, and certainly in parts of the country. In Shetland, at the Lawrence Mass on 20th of August, folk would start to cut what they called teck, which, do you ken what teck is?
No.
Would you think it's just thatch. They would cut heather and put it in a stack ready for later in the year.
Mm-hmm.
Another thing that happened on the 1st of August, 1714. George I, the great grandson of King James VI, came to the throne. Wasn't he universally popular? Going by this lyric here, "Wha the deal have we gotten for a king but a wee wee German lairdie? Fin we gaed to bring him hame, he was delving in his yerdie, shucking kale and laying leeks, but the hose and but the breeks, and up his beggar duds he cleeks, the wee wee German lairdie."
Is that Burns?
I didn't think so. I think it's maybe Hogg. I'd hate to look it up, but it's a great song, great tune to it as well.
Any more?
Ony Mair, the Battle of Trinent, as you can, I bide in Trinent these days. 1797 in August, that was when there was the protest about the government's decision to introduce military service into Scotland. And unfortunately, it was a wee bit of a riot. There was 12 people killed, but there's now a statue in the middle of Trinent to Jackie Crookston, one of the folk that was involved in the riot.
So that's it.
That's it.
Can I just put down my wee bitty as well? Because on the 9th and 10th of August, I'm going to join Peter Ferguson's team for the party at the Palace. I'm going to have my high-vis top on. It's a music weekend, and the headliners are Deacon Blue, Hue and Cry, James Grant, Attic Lights, The Bluebells, and Donny Monroe, and Simple Minds, and much, much more. So there I am, going to be part of Peter's team. Peter's one of my heroes. He's an entrepreneur for Bankery. He's just taking all these bands together and creating all these different events. I'll maybe try and get him onto the programme sometime. But I'm going to be up there.
Smashing. And
his team. Aye. Tickets are online. Congratulations to Peter for getting this organised at Linlithgow Palace. It's a party at the Palace. And congratulations again to Rory McIlroy for winning the golf thing. Isn't that a fantastic achievement? I have to mention it because...
Aye, you're saying you were a bit more sporty than you've been letting on.
I was an athlete. This becomes a huge surprise to have that folk looking at my new. But you see, we learned to sprint because there's a golf course in between the village I grew up in, Portnochy, and the other village across the golf links fee is Cullen. So the bairns grew up playing on this golf course. And what we did really well was run for the greenie because we never paid to get on from where were we. And we sprinted up the embrace like athletes that you used, you know, we were Olympic athletes. And we came out as a lot of really talented sprinters and athletes out of Scotland. That's far we got our sprinting abilities, running through the greenie in golf links. We're quite good golfers as well, anyway. Far was a... right. No, here, listen to this.
Great, and we fit like a day through your ear or whatever.
And do you feel that makes people relax? Or?
Oh, definitely, aye. That's why we've outspoken. Ken, our parents brought us up speaking that, like, Ken. And, okay, fair enough, sometimes if you're speaking on the phone, you have to adjust a bit. But, Ken, if you're speaking to...
I've wummel our voices for the recently awarded Scots Tune of the Year, the Murrayshire Tune O'Keefe. The community have been rightly enjoying their success, but they are nae folk to rest o'er long, if ever. They're already thinking of the future. Marguerite Cruikshank is the proprietor of the shop in the centre of Keith called The Mither Tongue. It is a real Pandora's box for folk that want to find Scotch language information and literature and other bits. Maggie's a very active member of the team for putting together the application for the Scots Tune Award. So fit are the planning for the future new?
Scots Tune Group are trying now to get together to put our heads together and try to decide on effective wise of promoting Keith as a Scots Tune, and that's a very exciting prospect. We shared a great workload between marketing and education. It's the two that would come first to my own head, but there'll be other things we'll be wanting to do, I dare say, but that's the next step.
It seems whatever you're doing, it's working anyway.
And I suppose because there's no a dedicated place in Keith for folk would be able to find out mayor, and this is something I've kind of done for a long time, they can pick up bits of information here in front of in
the Mither Tongue shop.
At Mither Tongue here, about the history, the language, and who we're trying to ticket for it. And I've spoken with the community council, and they're happy we met to put the Faking to Keith boards in the windy. So that if anybody's interested in language, it can come in and pick up our leaflet learn more about it.
Sorted it.
Learn an awful lot more, because obviously I'm not an academic or have that kind of qualifications, but to learn a wee bit more and a blather about it. The thing. I quite often get folk that have, again, their granny has gone to New Zealand, for example, 50, 60 years ago, and they're still dropping Scots words into their conversations. So I get conversations like that with folk from far-flung places quite a lot.
Right, question though. Mm-hmm. So I very well say, well, we're keeping this going, we've got this award, but what about the young folk? How involved are they?
They're very much involved through the school, and there's some great work going on through the schools and great talent among the bairns as well. But that's some of the youngins. I think one of the big challenges is when they hit their teens and maybe they think it's not so cool to speak Scots anymore. I find even with my grandchildren, and it worries me a great deal because there's you can. I'm speaking to them. We're all as a family, broad Doric speakers. And you're speaking to them in Doric and they're understanding what you're saying, but they're answering in English. When I tell my grandson Neil Ango, tell your pints, they're louse, and he can't exactly fit to eat. But yet, you can, would be more inclined to speak to, about his laces.
But that's because maybe they're being bombarded, maybe more than we were,
for
television, for internet.
Aye, absolutely. That is it. So I think that's why we have to probably work harder to try and undo that. And I tell them when they're going to want to play football, I said, I play football in Scotland, it's fit by that you play. So I'm kind of beginning to get through it, but it's an uphill job, it really is.
But there's an awful lot of positive signs in the horizon, isn't it? I mean, you've got the Scots Language Coordinator appointed. That should cheer you up a bit.
Aye, definitely. I had Jean the lassies when did a blether woman, she came through to Keith not long ago and we blethered for an hour. And they're busy putting, I think it's about half a dozen, I'm not very sure, to put together plans for how best they can support teachers in the classroom. And there's a wee bit about that also in our leaflet that anybody can pick up. So just trying to keep folk aware that there's a lot of good work going on. And I'm trying to get across that it is our bairns that's going to take it for it, because we'll not be about for...
Never
forever, no, I'm afraid.
Despite fit with it, we're
although I've threatened mine, I'm going to bide for a long time yet.
Well, I'm pleased to hear that.
Yes.
And as they say, mair power to your elbow.
Thank you very
or your
much.
Elbic,
oh, my elbic, aye. Mair power to my elbic. Many thanks. Yeah.
Just tell me if I'm confident in...
Well, I bide in your mill.
I've
been here all my life.
Aye. Which is just in the outskirts, I
can't. It's just an outskirts, a mile away.
Aye. For other posh folk bide.
The local voices are Keith and Murrayshire, finishing my session at the Miller Tongue Shop with proprietor Maggie Cruikshank. And that just about tucks us up to lousing time again. Quick check with Steve for a mayor extract, Facebook or Rummels. I pick up on that Scots language coordinator, Steve, because you got news of something else that has to do with schools as well, haven't you?
It was just to make folk aware that the Scottish Qualifications Authority has... put in place the first ever qualification in Scots language, and that's starting for August of this year. Folk can take it for secondary three to right through to further education colleges, and it's a whole well involved course with Scots language study and the history of the language, and you can learn it if you didn't speak it half a wheel. And I think it's great that we're
that's
getting
fantastic.
The recognition.
That's recognition. That is progress. Real big progress. Right, and for the book, again, is the technical bits again for the programme.
Well, just if you want to get in touch with the show, it's info@scotslanguageradio.com. You can find us on Facebook, facebook.com/ScotsLanguageRadio, and we're on iTunes as iWiz.
Thank you, Steve Byrne, for your rumbling again. And before I go, I want to say a big thank you to the folk who made me feel half a welcome up at the Lossiemouth Folk Festival. It was a very special singers' weekend. Each concert, Steve, was singers from bluegrass to ballads to blues to trad and new songs, lasting about 5 hours on Friday and Saturday nights. I've never seen a washboard player like Fit Gus Main did on Friday night. He was a hell drum kit, a complete drum kit. I'm going to put up a photo of Gus on our Facebook page so you can see him. And he's got gloves with thimbles on the end of his gloves so that it makes the thing sound better. He's got his mum's posh gloves on. And then again, Kenza put the fact that he's used
there'll be holes in the end of them new.
Aye, well, but he was fantastic, and it was just a really, it's never advertised this festival, and I even kind of I should be mentioning it because it's so successful.
Aye,
but the singing quality was fantastic. And another special thanks, I can't leave him out, to our soon sorter Richie Werner. We've been knitting this programme for a while together, and it's knitting grand. Join us again for the next episode. In the meantime, fae me, Frieda Morrison, and Steve, buy the new.